Hello, and welcome to the Art of the Cut podcast, brought to you in partnership with Boris Effects and our sponsor, Jump Desktop. I'm Steve Hallfish. I'm a working film and TV editor, and for the last 9 years, I've done over 400 interviews with the world's best editors. I've been using Boris Effects products for almost 30 years, and I'm proud to partner with them to bring you some great filmmaking content. Today on Art of the Cut, Ken Aluto, ACE, Jane Rizzo, ACE, and William Henry, ACE, discuss cutting Succession, which has earned all three of them Emmy nominations for separate episodes this year. Ken landed his first Emmy nomination in 1996 for American Experience. He was also nominated for an Emmy and an Ace Eddie for 30 Rock, then won an Emmy and Ace Eddie the following year for 30 Rock again. More Emmy nominations and another Ace Eddie nomination came his way for 30 Rock in subsequent years. Then additional Emmy nominations for Succession in 2020 and last year. Ken has also worked on Modern Love, Genius, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and others. Jane was nominated last year for an Emmy and an Ace Eddie for an episode of Succession. She also cut features Z for Zachariah, Maggie, The Hunt, and Leave No Trace, as well as TV series including Dash and Lily and Dickinson. William was nominated for an Emmy in 2020 for Succession. He's cut features including Soul Men and TV series including The Gilded Age, Dickinson, and Monsterland. Before I hop into our discussion with the Succession editors, a brief thank you to our sponsors. Jump Desktop is a high-performance and secure app that lets you virtually connect to your editing bay as if you were physically there. Keep all your assets in one place and connect to your powerful editing bays from anywhere. Jump Desktop's high-performance remote desktop protocol lets you edit from any low-powered laptop. With end-to-end encryption, native support for macOS and Windows, and multi-monitor support, you can be productive from anywhere. Jump Desktop also has collaborative screen sharing for collaboration with your team. See what thousands of editors have been using to get their work done from across the world. Visit jumpdesktop.com/cut to begin your free no-limits 14-day trial today. And to our partner, Boris Effects. I've been using Boris Effects and Sapphire for almost 30 years now, so they're not just a sponsor to me. I feel like they've been a partner in my cutting room for decades, helping me to deliver on the creative vision of my clients, directors, and producers. For all of us, our work is about bringing a creative idea to the screen, and for me, Boris Effects is one of the important tools that I use to do that. To see how they can help you on your latest project, head on over to borisfx.com and check out the Boris Effects suite, which includes Sapphire, Continuum, Mocha Pro, Silhouette, and Optics, all in a low-cost monthly or annual subscription. If you want to read this interview with great visual support, you can go to borisfx.com/AOTC. That site also has other great filmmaking content, so keep that bookmarked. And now, Ken Aluto, ACE, Jane Rizzo, ACE, and William Henry, ACE, on editing the Emmy-nominated TV series Succession.
Hi, I'm Jane Rizzo, and I edited 2 episodes this season and started on season 1 of Succession. And then I worked on season 1, 3, and 4.
I'm Ken Aluto. I've worked on every season of Succession, I think 4 episodes each season.
And I am Bill Henry, and I was on season 2 and season 4.
Since you edited multiple episodes, how did you choose the episode that was submitted for Emmy consideration?
You know, we just are asked to submit which episode we most like.
Was there something, Ken, in the episode that you submitted that made you feel like that was the best choice?
Yeah, well, it was the finale of the whole series, and it had a lot of great stuff, great scenes in it. It was a bit of a challenging episode. It was great. It was a lot of great scenes, but the editors cut started out as being like 2 hours, and so we had to cut at least about 30 minutes out of it. But they're just, you know, great performances, every show, great performances, great camera work, great writing, and all of the above.
I went with Connor's wedding. There was a lot of anticipation about it, and not necessarily amongst audience members who were sort of broadsided, I think, that it came so early in the season. But it was also just sort of a uniquely staged episode in that it sort of unfolded in real time from the moment the episode opens.
I chose the election episode just because I thought it was a fun one. And the challenge of different pacing between the hecticness of the election and also the kind of quieter, smaller scenes. I just like that kind of contrast between building up the tension and then pacing it with these like quieter, but still really big moments, like Shiv saying, you know, she's pregnant to Tom.
One of the things that I noticed as an editor that I thought would be difficult to deal with, and I would love to hear your comments, is that the characters don't seem to speak lines of dialogue. They're always saying kind of what the... kind of like stuttering, like I'm stuttering right now. The characters speak in that way where they're never quite saying anything. They're always trying to say something. Does that mean every take seems different? It almost seems ad-libbed in a way.
I would say no, they're pretty consistent. I think Jeremy has a little thing of in his character where he kind of stutters sometimes a little bit. I think that's part of his character, but otherwise, you know, sometimes it's some ad-libs, but usually they stick to the script. You know, and they're just great, you know, amazing actors, and are pretty consistent, very consistent in their, you know, in terms of their developing their character and knowing what their character is.
The script has a very kind of conversational feel to it. The stutters, but also the ums and stuff are actually in the script. I would say most of it is really obviously in the acting, but also the writing. That's the way Jesse and the writers, that's their style.
So, and the other thing that I wanted to talk a little bit as far as style is concerned, is the handheld kind of nature of the show. Does that mean for you as editors that you're also looking at camera movement in addition to performance, almost like the camera as performance? Obviously, the actor is the main performance, but does it affect the editing, in and out points, that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All three of us can probably concur on this throughout the series. The way they shoot the show is very verite, and the camera is always on the move, which is sort of a challenge, but also exciting both for the actors themselves, who find that they are always having to be on, even when they don't even know where one of the three cameras is at any given time. And then for us, it's always about in standard coverage, when someone says a line, generally, you can be guaranteed that if you go through takes 1, 3, 4 through 7 or whatever, they're going to be on camera saying a line. Succession does not follow that paradigm. It's completely, every single take is different. So you're always sort of having to dig out or find the lines on camera when you need them. You can see the way it's cut that we're not obviously always on camera when people are speaking, but still that's sort of the big challenge of the show.
We're always looking for the best performances and the best camera moves, and it's challenging at times.
And that was kind of set with the pilot in terms of the style of the show. Adam McKay shot the pilot. I think it was a whole year before they actually shot season one. I kind of watched some of the earlier episodes. I feel there's more of the kind of like shock zooms in season one than definitely season four. I mean, season four, I feel like everyone kind of like just knew what they were doing in terms of like all the actors were on their game and the crew, and so it's just this dance between the camera and the actors, and it's finding the moment.
While we're talking about multiple cameras, when you're in dailies, the dailies process, how do you three like to deal with multiple cameras? Are you watching them in a group? Do you sit down and watch every single angle for every single take? Or are you kind of throwing up the multicam view and watching it that way?
Myself, I watch multicam. It's not always three cameras. Sometimes there are single cameras. Sometimes it's two cameras. Sometimes there's six cameras if it's a big crowd scene, you know. But I definitely say I think it saves some time, and I can sort of concentrate on three different images at once or two images at once and see where they're going. And I, you know, use markers or locators on the timeline and stuff like that to mark what I like.
I wish I were Ken. I wish I could do that. I would save so much time. But my tiny little brain cannot process three images going at the same time. So I do the very arduous task of watching every single camera on its own. Ken does string outs for his lines, or has his assistant assemble those. I hope I'm not giving away any company secrets there, Ken. But Jane and I work very similarly in that we both use locators. I generally go through, I have my assistant go through and put a locator on every line throughout the takes that is in a group clip for the entire, you know, for all three cameras or however many cameras are running. And then I'll go through and watch that, and I'll change the color of the locator for things that I like, either the camera move or a line reading. And if there are any reactions that I see that I find that I think are going to be of value, I mark those as well. And that's just sort of how I move through the daily process.
So I'm a hybrid of pen and bill because I also screen as multicam, but I use the markers. And I usually write down notes as I'm screening. And then actually when I start cutting, I don't really look at my notes. I just cut. And then after I've cut the scene, I'll go back and look at the notes and see if stuff matches. And if it doesn't, like, I'll look at stuff again. But I like having notes of like the first kind of reaction to the footage. But then I also find myself sometimes as I'm cutting that I may be drawn to a different performance. But in general, unless when it's the really crazy five camera scenes, I'm able to watch two to three cameras. You know, you kind of like favor like whoever is the main person in that scene. I try to, as much as possible, watch in multicam just because there's just so much footage.
Well, since we're talking about the Emmys, anytime you are thinking about voting for Emmys, Ace Eddies, Oscars, what is it that when you're watching someone else's work that you are thinking about when you're choosing to put a check mark next to somebody's name on a voting card?
I was just talking about this with some friends the other night when they were asking you, it must be very hard to watch stuff and not sort of judge everything you're watching. And that is true to a degree, but I find that if something is well done and I feel like I'm in capable hands in the first 10 minutes or 15 minutes of whatever it is, that I stop paying attention in a way to how it's put together, unless there's something particularly dynamic or there's a structural sort of convention that has been used to tell the story, either in flashback or whatever the subject may be. And then I start really sitting up and taking notice of those sorts of things. But if the story or the film really sort of grabs me by the throat and I'm engaged by the characters and the storytelling and the writing, then that would be where I'd probably tick my box.
Because I always feel like it's so hard to judge because no one knows what footage you're being handed. So you could be doing miracles, or it's like the hardest thing to judge. I think in general, not knowing what there was in terms of footage, I'm always drawn towards really good performances. Because I feel that's a lot of what we do is craft really good performances, and anything that has really good performance, like, you know, I just feel like we all know how we can make a very good performance in the edit room.
I would agree. I mean, it's kind of hard to judge. I mean, particularly like for Emmys, is the submissions increase year after year, and it's hard to see everything. But, you know, so I kind of get drawn to just shows that it really interests me. And again, you know, it's really hard to judge editing because it's, you know, it's all built on the directing, the story, the footage you get. And if it's something that pulls me in, I guess that's when the show is a show that I really enjoy. That's kind of where my brain or check marks go, you know.
Was there any collaboration between the three of you or other editors on the show? Do you walk down the hall and show a scene to somebody, or do you chat about things in the lunchroom or whatever?
Yeah, we visit each other a lot in the rooms are close together and talk about scenes and look at things sometimes together or just talk about our episode. But yeah, we definitely collaborate. We're not going to collaborate, but just talk about our own episodes. And if there's time, I always will look at one of their editor's cuts just to see, you know, how they're doing and, you know, what that episode looks like, because I'm going to be doing another episode after that. So it's nice to see the story come together. And even though I've read this script.
Specific to Succession and Jesse's style of writing, he often will write story points along the way in multiple episodes. And then when the shows start sort of coming together, after he started to see them in sequence, then he starts to make sort of broader scope decisions about, well, maybe that particular story point would be better served if we held it later or brought up sooner. And I think that we all sort of keep track of that because it's sometimes hard when there's so many different interconnecting story plot points that all three of us are sort of tracking throughout the season. I do think that we find ourselves sort of at loose ends about, well, this feels familiar from the script. Do you think Ken use it in his? Did Jane have it in hers? Things of that nature, I think we definitely talk about pretty regularly. And as Ken says, we do look at each other's editor's cuts because that is sort of the full cut of the whole show before it starts getting trimmed down by directors and EPs and Jesse.
And I also think it's helpful to just see where the characters are at in terms of performances, knowing what just has happened, of like you're leaving Shiv at this moment. So when you come back with her, you know, like that kind of stuff.
That I think was the biggest sort of challenge, I think, for the three of us was tracking that Tom Shiv dynamic this season, because it was always sort of shifting very gently in one direction or another. Ken's amazing balcony scene. Tracking those, I remember sort of having to subtly make some shifts in my scene in episode 9 based on the information that had been laid out in Jane's episode at the election. And those sorts of performance adjustments between the two of them, I feel, happen fairly frequently throughout this season. They're very carefully calibrated.
What's the schedule like on one of these shows? Shooting schedule and then a post schedule once the shooting is done?
It kind of varies from episode to episode, I think. But usually it's 12-day shooting. The director gets roughly 4 days. And Jesse's writing additional episodes. So a lot of times it takes a while to get his feedback on stuff. It really varies from episode to episode. Yeah.
All of you have been on multiple seasons. You kind of know the show better than some of the directors. So how is it like to work with a TV director who's kind of a hired gun and then their choices, their notes to you during their 4-day director's cut, and then knowing that you're going to be moving on to a Jesse session after that?
Most of the directors were returning directors. So I think everyone on season 4 was returning. And Mark, he's been the supervising director since season 1, supervising director slash EP. And so I think there's a lot of trust between him and Jesse. Jesse likes to watch the editor's cut. Even though rarely do the directors cut that much out, I think he still wants to see what was the original script that was shot. From my experience this season, the notes were honestly pretty minimal. And I think maybe it's the directors are aware that Jesse's going to come in. But as you mentioned, you know, like I think Jesse trusts all three of us since we've done multiple seasons. Just the most incredible person, but they're like incredibly precise and insightful, I would say. But also you'll get big chunks with no notes whatsoever. Like, he's not kind of like nitpicky about stuff. He'll give you some maybe broader, this is the right performance, but the notes are actually fairly minimal.
This season, I had the pleasure of doing 2 episodes with Mark Mylod, and then the other one was Andre I had worked with in season 2. Because of that, I had already sort of had a relationship and a shorthand with them, and we all sort of understood what the show was and what my capabilities were in terms of putting the thing together initially. You know, Mark is a little more daring in the stuff that he takes out because he's got the backstory on what they've talked about on set, Jesse and he. So he probably would try taking more things out than others would. But in the end, everyone sort of knows that it's going to be sort of Jesse's rodeo. And he takes Frank Rich's notes and Jane Trencher and all these other people from the writers' room. There are a lot of people that we see notes from. He is very good about digesting and then giving a sort of overall round of notes that we can do a pretty economical pass on. But he loves sitting in the room, watching it, giving some broad strokes, and then he'll generally send his notes back to us.
One of the things I often talk to editors about is the need or the ability to sit in on the mix and what the value of that is.
We know the show better than anyone. I mean, I've gone there where there's ADR lines missing and stuff, you know, just because the post team is great, but there's 10 episodes and three of us just know our every little choice that was made better than any of them.
There's just so much sound work in these things. There is a lot there besides keeping track of ADR lines and production lines that you, or even a breath or a sigh or any number of things that, you know, you're wildly sensitive to in terms of the rhythm of the cutting and what you've built out over all these months. And to see it, you know, and I've been on shows where I haven't been allowed into the mix and then I see it aired and I just want to take a gun to my head because I'm like, what the heck? So, yes, we are fortunate that we are given the opportunity to go in there and do that and balance things in a way that feels right for us. And then, of course, in the end, it is Jesse's call on how we land.
Tell me about your agents. And I would think that most of you are getting a lot of your work yourself, word of mouth, your reputations. What is the value of an agent to you? What does your agent do for you that makes them worth the 10%?
I would say, out of 5 jobs, maybe 1 to 2 will come from my agent. And I feel like Succession was actually one of the ones that came through my agent in 2017, I think, it was season 1. He just kind of said, there's this HBO show coming. I think it could be good. Mostly, I really hate having to negotiate anything. And I love having someone else do that. And It happened to me really early on in my career, but once I was in a position where like some stuff was getting sketchy and I was like, are they going to hire another editor? And it was just helpful to have someone to talk through and have them call the producer. And like, for me, the most important thing is just having someone negotiate.
I agree. To be fair, Jane should be have gotten 10% of Succession because she managed to get me in for the initial introduction. Agents are great for that, not having to talk about money and those things that I'm going through a little bit of a thing right now with a possible job. I have Ann Murtha at Murtha's Course, and she's very lovely, hard-nosed. People like her. And she was also really sweet. I went into a rough patch about, I don't know, in 2016 or so, where I was let go from a feature. And she was really, you know, she came to New York, and I remember having lunch with her, and she was just like, this is going to be all work itself out. You're going to be fine. Even though I was in this abyss of, you know, thinking my career was over. And she was right, because here we sit.
What about just approach? So Ken, it sounds like you are the one that likes to have string outs.
I do like to string out some of my assistant to try to do those. It's a little difficult show for that to happen on just because the camera's all moving around. But, you know, as much as they can do that, it's great. Mostly it also helps with, you know, if a director comes in and wants to see the various takes, it's really useful to have those strung out. And then I start piecing my cut together. And a lot of times I'll just do like a really rough assembly and maybe use alternate takes of the line just because I'm not sure which ones I'm going to like better and kind of weed it down. And then put it away for a couple, you know, in terms of doing a scene.
I will always have multiple versions of scenes with alts and stuff, but I make them work them a fair amount. I think what I change a lot, the hardest for me is the beginning and sometimes the ending of a scene. So sometimes I find myself just put in something so that you can start. And then, you know, like I often find myself going back to the beginning. But in general, I feel like I'll do a pretty polished scene and I'll send it to the assistant to do sound work, unless I'm just really unsure of what direction the scene should go. But in general, I trust, I think, my gut and kind of go one way and clean it up fairly well. And then you know, once three scenes are together, I'll obviously, I may be massaging both internally and the beginning and the end. So I do feel like I'm constantly tweaking.
I can't concentrate if there are a lot of bumps and it's messy and whatnot. So I do try and make it as polished and clean as I can initially. And I will do versions where I try other takes within a version. But I definitely feel like there's a huge advantage to once you've worked your way through a scene to shelving it and moving on to the next and sort of making your way through it. And then I'll do what these sort of string outs is what I do when I start getting scenes that are sequential in the script. And if I have a hole in between two sequences, I'll generally just work within the three scenes, let's say in a row, and I will work those. And then when I get those filled in, then I'll go back and sort of look at the whole thing and start making more cuts and changes and judgments and be like, what was I thinking the day I cut this? That sort of self-talk goes on. And if I ever get into a hole, which occasionally happens when you're dealing with 9-10 people around a table and you're there at 10 at night trying to solve a riddle that you just can't seem to solve. Invariably, if I just cut the cord, go home, and I come back the next morning and look at it fresh, I can unravel it pretty quickly in the morning. The sort of the gut hit of the material in the first pass is hugely important to me. When I do these locators, when I'm watching the dailies and I change them from red to magenta, I invariably find that a huge percentage of what I want winds up in the cut are those initial sort of responses where I was like, oh, that was a great beat. When it's in dailies, when my assistant first does it, they're all red. And then when I go through it and watch it, I switch them depending on if they speak to me.
The contextual change of scenes when you start to put them together. Would you care to talk a little bit about that? And when do you start to bolt the scenes together? And then what happens to your decision-making of when you cut the scene in dailies to when you start to bolt them together? What starts to happen?
I start putting the scenes together as they're coming in. As you know, I have three scenes in a row that I can put together. I'll do that and watch them down. And it's also useful, you know, because if we're putting score in there, you know, sometimes you feel like, oh, I want music here, but I'm waiting for the next scene. So I got to put them together first before I can put the score in. Yeah, I mean, it's just a revision process throughout. I mean, working on one scene and then putting them together and adjusting, making adjustments as I go.
In each of your episodes that are nominated, what was a scene that either you feel was particularly challenging that you're particularly proud of?
I cut the election episode, which they had shot for several days before they actually started shooting the episode. They shot in the NBC studios in New Jersey, the whole kind of election night coverage. Because in general, Jesse likes as much as possible to be practical, and most monitors are, I mean, in this one episode, I think like maybe there's two VFX shot in terms of green screen, but it was all practical, which I think also really helps the actors with the performance to be reacting to what was, you know, like quote unquote happening that election night. So I had all this footage from the TV cameras, and in general, unlike other episodes, Jesse really wanted the background sound to be present, and he wanted to make sure you feel the TV, this kind of like constant political commentary going on. That was the challenge of that episode, was just kind of like a little bit my hands were tied in certain moments as to what was on the screen and how they were reacting. And again, because the cameras are constantly moving and no two takes are alike, sometimes it was really hard to make it feel like it was all happening at the same time with the screen and having to match to that. So any of those scenes that were like in the kind of like fishbowl TV stuff, you know, there's a scene where Roman goes downstairs and then you cut and you see the newscaster and shift comes. So that scene was like kind of hellish to cut, and they shot it, I think, over like the course of 2 days, but I think it came out pretty well.
In the finale, there was, I guess, a lot of scenes, but I guess the one that was most challenging was the, it turned out to be the final scene they shot of the whole series, which was the meal fit for a king, where they basically anoint Kendall to be the one, and they go into the kitchen and they're all kind of happy at this point, which is unusual. Let's make him a meal fit for a king, you know, and they start taking stuff out of the fridge. The mother comes in. The continuity was like for every take was totally different, you know, putting stuff in the blender, the mother coming in, the refrigerator stuff, everything, Kendall sitting, wherever it was. So it was fun to cut, but really challenging to make it work. You know, there were longer versions where they were tossing eggs around. There was shorter versions. And, you know, it was really fun because you see the Roman licking the cheese, and there's just a lot of fun stuff in it. And then he pours the stuff on Kendall's head, which I think he did maybe like probably two or three. I think there were maybe like seven takes. And I think he did it probably like three or four times. And I was talking to Mark. And I went to Mark and said, "Wow, how many shirts did Kendall have?" He said they actually had to wash it because it was a very expensive shirt. It's only between takes, you know. And it was just a fun scene to cut. And then there was like an outtake where you see Mark and Jesse hugging each other after, because it was the final scene they shot. So it was good.
The centerpiece of episode 3 was the plane to boat phone call that included this very elaborately staged 27-minute take that Mark, I guess, was inspired somehow by something that Kieran mentioned to him. When they first started shooting the sequence, like 3 days at the very beginning of the shoot of the call, though I got a lot of coverage leading up to that day when they shot the actual one take with the three cameras, I strung the entire scene on the boat together as my clothesline, because they shot the plane later, though they had Tom in London doing live phone calls to the set when they were shooting the boys and Shiv on the phone, so that they had a real reactions to it. And he wasn't literally phoning it in. He was acting Tom on the other side of the phone. And very often there was a lot of overlapping between what was being said by the boys and Shiv on the floor and then the actual call coming in from London. And so the trick was sort of managing that and then sort of seamlessly cheating stuff that was actually production dialogue from the plane, from Tom's side. It was a real-time 27-minute run that followed them as they find out about the demise of their father, and Kieran doesn't believe it. They're all sort of in a little bit of a state of disbelief, and they were really quite amazing at their ability to sort of stay focused. And in the one-er that they did on the third or fourth day of the shoot, in the last section when they were sort of up in the captain's quarters, the sort of interesting thing about the one take was that they were good in the first half to two-thirds of it, but you could definitely see them ramping up. And by the time they got up stairs to the captain's quarters, where Kieran is in total denial that his father is dead, and Shiv is like, no, I think he's really gone. A lot of that was from that one take, and he was incredible and she was incredible. I don't know, it was like live theater to a degree, and they're just extraordinary actors.
Congratulations on your nominations and good luck with the Emmys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Great talking to you.
That's it for Art of the Cut this week. Thank you so much for listening. Again, if you'd prefer to read this interview with visual support and clips and trailers, head on over to borisfx.com/AOTC, where there's a ton of great expert content for filmmakers of all types. Also, check out my book, Art of the Cut, Conversations with Film and TV Editors for a topic-driven curated look at the craft of editing. Thanks to Ken Aluto, ACE, Jane Rizzo, ACE, and William Henry, ACE, for joining us on Art of the Cut. And thanks to our partners, Boris FX, and to our sponsor, Jump Desktop. Be sure to check them out at borisfx.com and jumpdesktop.com/cut. I'm Steve Holmfish. Thanks for listening, and please tell all the editors and filmmakers that you know that to get more great Art of the Cut interviews every week, please subscribe on your favorite podcast app.